Chapter 27 Springer. She spent all morning waiting for someone to come talk to her. Here in this comfortable cell they'd found for her, the people Wiley had put her in touch with, the people from the World Senate Court. And how did Jennifer Wiley have that kind of contacts book? Except somehow Carol had known she would have, and that of all the people in the world she could call, only Wiley was guaranteed free of Thompson's influence. And it was not a cell they'd consigned her to, not really. But they'd said she couldn't leave. She was the key witness, after all for her own protection. She had three spacious rooms, high up in a tower here in New York. She had all the entertainment media she wanted, but no calls out. Not even to her own lawyers, who were, in any case, Thompson's lawyers, and absolutely weren't supposed to talk to her. But when the chime went and someone did turn up, that was who she expected. The lawyers with their tablets of legal language, there to explain to her all the genteel threats and bribes she was so used to, that she had authorized on so many other people. For her job. For her employer. And she understood, now that she could, that she had never had a choice about doing those things, nor even a choice about wanting to do those things. But at the same time, she thought about the woman she had been when she'd applied to work on Thompson's team. Jennifer Wiley had said that Carol probably hadn't been a good person. Carol couldn't say if she'd been left with the choice, whether she'd have backed off from doing most of the things she'd done. Her mind was still tangled up in memories of being loyal, of loving Thompson, even as she hated him. Even though they'd taken the collar from her throat, she could still feel it there. And what was the point of all her testimony, of her turning on her master and biting his hand, if it didn't make her free of him? But no, not Thompson's legal team come to beat her down with words. Not even the World Senate people to take testimony. Instead, alone at the door, was Jennifer Wiley. "No," said Carol, trying to close it. "No interviews, no." But Wiley was in the arc of the door already, weirdly nimble, stepping into Carol's personal space so that she fell back. Then the woman was inside the apartment, door closing at her heels, smiling disconcertingly.
"I'm not here for an interview, Miss Springer. Carol."
That smile didn't belong to an aspiring biopic producer here for a scoop. For a dreadful moment, Carol thought the woman literally wasn't herself, that she'd been taken over just like Thompson had done with the prisoners at Braintree. But the smile she saw did fit the other Jennifer Wiley, the one who'd said such strange things at the end of their meeting at the Live with U.S. offices, the one who'd given her the brooch. The B brooch. The whole domino chain of events falling into place now, that had just been scattered shards of memory, kept nonsensical and out of sequence by all the barriers they'd put up in Carol's head. She felt that only now, standing here with this woman, did she see all of it at once. She felt as though she didn't know herself, a stranger in her own head. She turned to glower on Wiley. She wanted to explode, to say that the woman had wrecked everything. For a brief moment, she wanted to be back in the collar where she wasn't allowed to doubt, and where she wasn't responsible for anything. But she didn't explode. That had never been a privilege accorded to her, and now she might have done. She was out of practice. She controlled herself. She put on her professional smile. "Well, if you're not here for an interview, Miss Wiley?" Pretending confusion, as though she hadn't worked out who this woman was or was a part of.
She made to step into the next room, but Wiley didn't move with her, as though she'd glued her feet down the moment she was inside.
"One moment," the woman said.
She'd put her earnest biopic producer's smile back on, and Carol wondered if that part of her was actually real, as well as the other thing, the bigger thing. And of course she could never ask, could never give away that she knew, couldn't. "What's it like?" The words out of her mouth, just as though she was free to say whatever she wanted. Being a part of it. Couldn't quite say Hum OS, even though she knew. Even though she'd fought against the human collective on her former employer's behalf. Even though the trigger dogs had killed one of this woman's sisters in Aslan's offices without a moment's hesitation. Wiley's smile didn't go away. Just became a very different smile. Less young, more wise.
"I sometimes wish," she said,
quietly enough that Carol had to lean in,
"that I wasn't born into this family. It's hard, Carol, to know what I know, to share so much and still be me. Easier to just be on your own, or easier to give up yourself and be no more than a limb, an organ of the whole. But easy isn't better. It's like being more than a part of something that's more than the sum of its parts."
"Glib," Carol said, hearing her own bitterness and marveling at it. She was surprised by the stab of envy she felt. "Did you come here to gloat?"
"To you?"
Genuine surprise.
"You're a hero. Even if half the world curses you right now, we know the truth. And that truth will come out. From your testimony at first, which they'll rubbish and question and counter with paid-off liars and frauds. But your headwear doesn't lie. It's all in there. In the kit they themselves gave you. In you and in Boyo."
Wiley saw her twitch and smiled again.
"And Boyo will be fine. Although he's less cooperative than you are, so know you're saving him too."
She was going to say something angry about that too, holding Boyo over her head to keep her playing nicely. Even as her lips parted, there was a thump from the room next door, the spacious media room with the comfy couch and the big screen. Just a discreet thump. Maybe just a robot vacuum ramming the wall with untoward force. Except she couldn't hear its whine, and there wasn't anyone else in the apartment. Even the security men stayed outside. The security men hadn't been outside when she opened the door to Wiley. It had only been Wiley's professionally polished smile that smoothed the transition, that had stopped Carol thinking of it. She backed off, and Wiley was reaching out a hand, saying,
"Carol, wait."
Illogically, she fled into the room the noise had come from, because the alternative would be standing there with whatever Jennifer Wiley actually was. She only got as far as the doorway, seeing it slide open to a scene of carnage. There were three men there, dressed in mottled gray fatigues, faces hidden by hoods, by goggles. They had come in through the window. There was a circular hole cut there that had set off none of the expensive alarms she'd been told the place came with. They had come with guns, bulky pistols with noise reducers, as subtle as death could get when it came out of a barrel. The guns were on the floor, and so were they. For a moment, she couldn't even see the others, even though they took up most of the room. The smell gave them away in that close space. A sharp smell, not even an animal smell, because animal smell usually meant mammals. There were three of them, too. They were bioforms, dragon models, their skins shifting under the lights, blurring them against the walls as though they were nothing but thick glass. Their yellow eyes stood out, the ivory of their shark teeth. She imagined them scaling the glass tower like geckos, even as the gunman had rappelled down from the roof.
"Miss Springer, good day,"
one of them said, in a polite, female-sounding voice, a strongly Antipodean accent. Its lipless mouth gaped to let the words out, the skin of its throat rippling to make the sounds. She tried to back off, but Wiley was at her elbow. For a moment, Carol was going to panic. Too much change, too little control. But she was used to that. It had been her job to turn chaos into order on demand. He sent them. The men, who she guessed were dead.
"As I said, your headwear is the clincher. They'd have made sure not to leave it in a readable state. A last desperate attempt. Thankfully, the WSRF had a few assets they could send over to clean up. Makes a change from disaster relief. But so much of the bioform engineering is rooted in their original military role. I'd like to show you something, if I could."
"Show me?" Carol made a weak gesture at the bodies.
"Not these. I'd hoped you wouldn't even see them. I apologize that you have."
Said so blandly. No admission to three deaths on anyone's conscience.
"We'll take them away, clean up, fix the window even. Nobody will know."
And at Carol's look.
"If you're thinking that they'll accuse our illegal killers of having killed their illegal killers, it's the sort of jurisprudent paradox nobody's going to be bringing to court. It was when they made it all within the laws that they were strong, because the laws were their laws and always favored them."
And of course, she herself, or the thing she represented, had been banned by those laws, forced underground.
"But without that shield, we're just as strong. Stronger."
And the three dragon models were taking the bodies, the guns, just taking them away. And Carol wondered where the guards at the door had gone, who had suborned or bribed or killed them. And all the while, Jennifer was just setting up something with her tablet so that the big screen came on suddenly, showing a view on a room from a high corner. Thompson. Carol started away from the screen. If it had been at a regular angle, looking at him across a desk like one of his addresses, she wouldn't have been able to face him. She was looking down, though, as if he was at the bottom of a pit. He wasn't alone, sitting in a bare room with a man she recognized as one of his regular legal team. An attack dog was how other lawyers described the man, though he was human enough. Wiley did something, and there was sound. The lawyer's low voice. Thompson's grunt replies. Carol knew the situation instantly, felt a sudden pang that she wasn't there for him. Because the lawyer was talking to him all wrong. Because Thompson needed her to intercede, to be the buffering layer between his naked ego and the world. In the next moment, she loathed herself for the thought, but that didn't mean it wasn't a part of her. The lawyer broke off mid-sentence, hand lifted close to his ear to indicate he was receiving a communication. Wiley was grinning, 5 years younger in that moment.
"He's finding out that Mars is finished for him," she explained.
"Mars?
His retreat. He sent his mind there. The man who would be God King, right? You know this more than anyone, Carol. You were there through all the planning he did with the late and unlamented Doc Valorian. But we had a secret weapon on Mars, it turns out. There's nothing left of him on the Red Planet except bad memories. Look, he's being told so now."
Carol could see the lawyer trying to spin it as something they could use, but Thompson was on his feet instantly, slamming his meaty hands against the table, the bang coming to her distantly, the flinch running through her, only an echo of how she'd once felt. He was raging, furious, practically foaming.
"What about her?"
he was demanding.
"They should have fixed her by now. Get her. Stop her."
eyes bulging as though he was about to go into cardiac arrest. I'm the her, Carol thought numbly. And one last part of her tried to suggest that she should want herself fixed, if Thompson said to fix her. But she confronted it, and it shriveled inside her and was gone.
We've sent word, of course, to say his goons got theirs, rather than getting you. Look, this is coming through now. Oh, properly anonymous, but he'll know.
And Wiley's grin was wide and spreading, weirdly infectious. Thompson was staring at the desk, fingers crooked as though trying to claw into the metal surface. The lawyer was saying not to admit anything, not to speak about things that would put his legal counsel in an awkward position. But Thompson wasn't hearing him. Thompson was digesting the news that Carol was still out there, very much alive, and very much going to ensure that the last of his veils and lies would be stripped away. She watched him roar at the lawyer until the man just backed out of the room and away. She watched him try to pick up the desk, but he could barely shift it. She watched his puffy, crimson face as he bellowed and screamed and attacked the walls, a festering knot of fear and hate, with nobody left to do its bidding. And after a minute of this, she felt that he was growing further away, or perhaps just growing smaller, becoming something minuscule and irrelevant, like a dying germ under a microscope. Something she'd been immunized against. Something she'd been purged of. She sat on the couch, still watching. The smile that slowly made its way onto her face wasn't like Wiley's grin, or anyone else's, but just her own.